Welcome to the Operation Move podcast. My name is Zoe, and ordinarily I might say something like, it's just me today, but in Learn to Run this week, we are working on not using minimizing language, so I'm not going to say just, I'm just going to say this is a solo podcast today. So this week I thought I'd talk a little bit about race prep and race strategy, and to make it a bit easier on myself, I thought I'd talk about half marathon because I just did one on the weekend, so it's fresh in my mind. And if you have been living under a rock, you might not have seen me bragging about it on Facebook, but if you've been on the internet, you probably have. So it wasn't an organised race. I used an app called Map My Run to kind of plot out a course that was going to be the right amount of distance, where I was minimizing the amount of time that I would actually have to be crossing roads, and also a route where like my car was kind of in the middle, so if I needed to like peel off and get some water, then I could. But so that's what I did on the weekend. And so I thought I would go through a little bit of what happens before, what happens during, what all of the things that you can do to put in place that are going to make that race day as easy as it can be. So probably the first thing you think about with preparing for a race is carb loading, and it's definitely something that for me has evolved over time. My approach to carb loading used to be a lot more different. I think that, you know, in the beginning it was just really an excuse to eat a lot of pasta, and I certainly did that. And it is something that you need to experiment with, because everyone responds to food differently. Everyone, you know, has different likes and dislikes, things that your body is keen on. Now, the traditional sort of theory is that you want to top up your carbohydrates because your muscles can only store so much glycogen, and that's definitely true. But the second part of the traditional theory of carb loading tends to be, and I've certainly done this in the past too, where you cut out high fiber foods or anything with fiber in it a few days before. And that is for the sole reason of stopping you from needing to go to the toilet mid-run. But what I've found over the years, and as my diet has changed and I've tried different things, is that, you know, whatever works for you normally is going to work for you on race day. I normally eat a high fiber diet. You know, it doesn't mean that I'm more likely to need to make a toilet stop during a race, particularly because that makes it that much easier to go to the toilet before a race. So it's sort of more what is going to work for you. You can, you know, test it out with long runs. The primary difference between a long run and a race day is the impact. So as soon as you start running faster, it is higher impact, and higher impact can combine with dehydration to create tummy upset. So that is something to be mindful of. So in that way, you might be better off testing out your fueling strategy, not just in your long, slow, easy runs, but actually in some of your high intensity sessions as well, because that's going to give you a much better sense of how your body is going to handle having a gel or whatever your fuel source is at pace, because having it at pace is very different to having it when you are just, you know, going for a cruise on your long run. So toilet stops aside, I still do carb load, and generally it would only be for the 2 days before, and it's not that much, you know, because I'm working with a nutritionist, so I, you know, track all of my food, so it's really easy to see how much I eat when I'm not carb loading and how much I eat when I carb load, because I'm counting macros and I know exactly how many grams of carbs I have in any given day. So on a normal day, I would have somewhere in the vicinity of, you know, 180 to 200 grams of carbohydrates, And on my two carb loading days, I would have, you know, 230, 240 grams of carbohydrates. So it's not nearly as exciting as it sounds. So effectively, at most, it's like 200 grams of extra carbohydrates. And then on the actual day, it is really whatever goes in terms of the fueling that works for you. But before that happens, in tandem with the carb loading, I would be drinking anywhere in the vicinity of 2 to 3 liters of water a day, and I would be having some lemon juice in that water, or you could use something like Hydrolite just to make sure that you are getting electrolytes in with that water, because if you're not normally drinking that amount of water, you can just end up losing too much salt and you can end up dehydrated even though you're having copious amounts of water, because you're not having any of the, you know, any of the electrolytes like sodium or magnesium or potassium or any of that sort of stuff. So it is something to experiment with, but the having that teensy bit of lemon juice in your water just makes it a lot easier for your body to absorb the water and make use of it. And then the other thing to be mindful of, obviously you would usually have a taper of some kind going into a key event, but a lot of times when you get towards your taper week, people like to have massages, and I'm all about massages. Massages are a great idea, but not the week before a race. The like 2 weeks out, great idea. A week out, you're a little bit too close to your muscles not actually recovering from that massage and just being a little bit too lethargic, a little bit too relaxed. So that is something to do well before you get to race day, like not a couple of days before. Don't do that. And so then you would have a fueling strategy in place, and mine is relatively complex, but I've just sort of worked it out over time what works for me. And so I have some pre-workout, which goes in some water, which is basically just, you know, like amino acids and some protein and some caffeine. It's nothing too major, and it just like it's lemon flavored, so it's pretty easy to take on. And so I have that probably a good half an hour before. And then I also have, this is a really, it's one of those things where, you know, normally if you are fueling, you're thinking like carbohydrates, and topping that up. And I have done that in the past and it's worked well, but what's also worked really well for me, which doesn't necessarily make any sense from a, you know, a carbohydrate point of view, is I make this fat fudge, which I can link to the recipe, and it is basically coconut oil and tahini with some honey. So there are carbohydrates in it, and some, you know, spices and cacao, and you know mix it all up, heat it all up, and then you freeze it. And I have a bit of that with some coffee in the morning. And yeah, like it shouldn't work because fat is hard to digest, but it does work. So I'm not sure. I have read, which I have not looked into it fully, that the medium chain triglycerides, I think they are, in the coconut oil is immediately available energy that you don't have to digest. So that might be why it works so well for me. But it sits really well in my stomach. For me, it's not like eating something. If I was eating something, because I normally run fasted, so it's not usual for me to eat something before I run. But if I was eating something, which is what I would tend to do before a marathon, I would want to eat as early as possible. Like if I could have a 2 to 3 hour window in between when I eat and when the race starts, that would be great. And I would go for things like oats with honey, or like I've had like a bagel with jam in the past, something that is is going to sit in your stomach really well. But for the half marathon, I'm not having to be quite so full on with the fueling as I would for a marathon. So, and I have found that the fat fudge actually works really well for me. And, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I have that, you know, probably a good, you know, that would be a good hour or more before I'm actually running. And then on the run, I have a gel at 6Ks, a gel at 12Ks, and then I have a gel at 18Ks if I can stomach it. Because the third one is always like, sometimes I go, yep, I can handle a third one, and sometimes my stomach's going, no, we can't handle a third one. So I just play it by ear with that one. But before we actually get to the race day, there's also the pacing strategy, which might not be important to you if you're not going in looking for a PB or a specific time or to improve a time. But if you are, it's a really good thing to consider. There's this, I can't remember where I read it, but there is this coach who said that every second too fast per kilometer that you go in the beginning of a race, and I think he was talking about the marathon, you lose 10 seconds per kilometer in the back end, which I'm not sure if it's true, but it feels very, very true. So it's really scary when you are going for a time to have the discipline in the first few kilometers to be running at slower than what your goal pace is. That is really, really hard, but it's really beneficial, because if you are sort of on target for what your goal pace is, you are going to have the energy at the end to pick it up and go faster, even though it doesn't feel like you will, you will. And if you are slightly being a bit too aggressive with your target, then you will probably manage even pacing. Whereas if you sort of go out too aggressive, then instead of having some energy left at the end, you just, it's really going to suck towards the end. So that's, with some things, people are probably better off with even pacing. And so for something like a marathon, I would probably tend to go with more even pacing for that. But for shorter distance, having a bit of a negative split plan is a good idea, because if you've paced it correctly and you've gone out a little bit slower than you planned to in the beginning, you will have the energy to kick it up into gear at the end. And so you will end up with a faster time overall than if you just attempt to either positive split or just, you know, start at the pace that you intend to go on, because you just want to give your body a little bit of time to warm up. And speaking of warming up, that was the other thing that I got a few questions about, because I went down and before I started, I ran a 4 kilometer warm up, which is what I always do before quality sessions. Actually, it's 3 kilometers of warm up, and it is 4 strides, and a stride is 10 second acceleration, holding that pace for 10 seconds and then 10 second deceleration. And with a warm-up stride, you're then aiming for, like, sort of the first stride will just be 70% pace, second stride 80% pace, third one 90%, and then 100%. And then you have sort of a minute to a minute and a half of recovery in between those. So it takes nothing out of you to do that speed work, because it's really short and you've got lots of recovery and you're fresh. But it is just warming up all of the systems that are going to need to go. Because an easy run is great, but you're not actually going to be doing an easy run. So it's sort of, so when I do it, it's kind of like, you know, warming up for that first 3Ks, just getting comfortable, you know, finding that rhythm, which from a biomechanics point of view, you don't find a rhythm until 3 kilometers. So that's the other kind of reasoning behind the warm up. And then you have the strides, and strides are like, okay, this is what it's going to feel like when we're going a bit faster, and you're going to get to probably the middle, and that's probably going to be about what your pace is going to be for the actual run. So you can kind of feel that, this is what it feels like, I feel okay, this feels good. And then you'll have the faster ones, which are there to really kind of prime your system, get your central nervous system ready, but you're not going to actually be going that fast. So it's just sort of not just about priming your body, but also mentally preparing for what's about to happen. And really, the more intense the run you're going to have, like the more warm-up you should have. It's really tempting to think, no, I'm running 21 kilometers. I don't want to run 4 kilometers before I'm running 21 kilometers. And if it was your first half marathon, I'd agree with you. But if this is something that you regularly do, you are going to feel so much better after a really full and comprehensive warm-up. I'm all about as much warm-up as possible. And in my case, it was actually really good because I'd misjudged what I should be wearing, and I ended up running back to the car and changing my top and into a singlet, which was a good call because it was sort of wet and windy, but it was not cold by any stretch of the imagination. And in terms of the pacing, I broke it down into 5 sections. So the first 3 kilometres, which is sort of, even though I have already warmed up, it's still the warm-up period where I'm just sort of like getting into the zone. And then the next 5, and then the middle 5, and then the another 5, and then the final 3. And also knowing myself, I can look at that and go, okay, the middle 5 are going to be the hard part for me. It's always that way. Doesn't matter if I'm doing a long run or whatever, I kind of get to the middle and I'm like, yay, halfway. And then I'm like, oh, crap, I've still got half to go. And particularly in a half marathon, that's how I feel about it. Like, it's always like, oh, you know, like I've still got all of this way to go. But being aware of that is when the hard part is helps to get through it because it's temporary. And of course, knowing that the last sort of like 3 to 5 kilometers aren't going to feel great because you've gone a long way and you're pushing the pace. But also doing it that way meant that I set sort of like the paces on my watch for the sections. So on my watch, I was only seeing the pace for the particular section and not seeing the overall time, which helped in a way to keep me focused, because I had no idea that I'd gone that fast. And if I'd gotten to the last 3 kilometers where it was really starting to hurt and I'd known that I was well under 2 hours, I would not have kept pushing as hard as I did. So I went in with my goal was to run to have an overall average pace of 5 minutes and 25 seconds per kilometre, which would work out to be like about 1:55. And that was what I thought was a relatively aggressive goal, particularly for not having any kind of race environment, no atmosphere. No water. Like, I had water in the car, but I decided not to stop for it. You know, like for those sorts of things, I thought that was a pretty aggressive goal. So what I then set on my watch was for the first 3 kilometres to be at a 5:35 pace, which should feel really comfortable. And then the next 5 kilometres to be at around a 5:30 pace, also very comfortable. And then the middle 5 to be at my goal pace of around 5:25. And then the next 5 to be at around 5:20. And then the last 3, whatever else I had in the tank at that point. And I set for the last 3, I set a really wide parameter for pace because I didn't want it to be beeping at me in the last 3 kilometres if I was going too slow. Human nature being what it is and me being what I am, I ended up going a little bit faster than those pacing guidelines, but I kind of knew I would do that. So I'd kind of set them at quite a, you know, conservative level. But I did make sure I was at no stage was I going 5 seconds faster. Like, I was keeping it within the zone, so I was able to get to the last sort of 3 to 5 kilometres and kind of like hold close to a 5 minute per kilometre pace, which sort of said to me that it that using those negative splits really worked out well because I still had plenty in the tank at the end. And the first 10Ks is something like I've run that pace in training many times, so it wasn't a very intimidating pace to run the first half. Had my three gels, was able to stomach the final one, which was good, and I was so ready to be done by the end. And I was really shocked when I pressed, well, it said workout ended, and then I hit save, and it was like 151, and I had no idea that I had gone that fast at all. So that was a kind of nice surprise, and I think actually it's the kind of thing that I would do again with not having the overall time on the watch, because it just helped me to be present and in the moment, like this is just the kilometre I'm running now. Because it can be quite an intimidating distance, and I just remember reminding myself in each one, like, we feel okay, body feels okay, this is fine, we're doing well, and just keeping it within that particular moment rather than thinking I've got to run, 10 more kilometres at this pace or 15 more kilometres at this pace, or, like I've got to run the last 5 kilometres at close to my 5K PB, or anything like that. Just kept it really focused on in the moment. And then after all of that, you've got recovery. So my recovery is I had brought a change of clothes, because when you're running in the cold, we really don't want to cool down too quickly. When running in, I mean, it wasn't that cold, but it was wet, and, the risk is when you are running in rain and that kind of stuff is that it's great during because it cools you down, but then you stop and you cool down too fast, and that's when you get sick. So I had a change of clothes, including some skins. So I had some compression and got into my change of clothes, and I went got a coffee and a cinnamon scroll. Basically, my approach to food after something like that is just whatever I feel like. I try to stay away from I'm going to have this thing because I ran this far and I earned it, because even though I kind of like I can fall into that mindset too, I don't like it. I don't like this idea of I have to run this far to like have like a freaking pastry, if I want something like that, I will eat something like that. And I don't like that sort of like that pattern of like punishment and reward, because for me the run is the reward. But I do think that in general my body has a pretty good idea of what it needs after that. So I had the coffee and the pastry, and then I had another coffee. I had like an Indian curry with rice and a naan for lunch, and I had potato soup and garlic bread for dinner, and I had some wine as well, which I hadn't had a drink in about 3 weeks. So I was probably more sensitive to that than what I would normally be. So, I get those things that people share with, like, if you run a marathon, you can eat 5 million donuts, but I really hate it, because it's like, if you want to eat some donuts, eat some donuts. You don't need to go run an obscene distance, Like, it's not, I just think it's such a waste of your relationship with food. And running, now that I'm talking about it, I think that the part that upsets me the most about it is that, like, you would reduce your running to some kind of calorie burning mechanism, that's all it is, so you can run, so I don't like it at all. Running should be its own thing that has absolutely nothing to do with food. I mean, I understand it because it is connected, and you need to fuel your running and you need to recover from your running with food, but that whole thing of this many donuts or this many cupcakes or, you know, or whatever, I feel like it trivializes the running part. Like it's this, just this means to an end, you know, and that, you know, that you've got to do something in order to eat. I mean, it feels really like it's about 5 million steps backward for, you know, for body image and self-worth and, you know, and honoring yourself and all of that stuff. But rant over, maybe it could be more. The sooner you have something after you run, the better. And oftentimes it's probably good to have it in liquid form because it's a lot easier to take on. I mean, even a coffee is going to help because, you know, because milk, as long as it's a milky coffee, because the milk has a decent mix of protein and carbohydrates. But, you know, even if you're going to be at a race, and you know, even if you just take like an energy bar with you or something, it's going to make a huge difference to your muscle recovery. So I had a rest day the next day, muscles weren't too sore, and then I was back running the following day. It recovery can be an interesting beast, you know. Like I've certainly had done runs in the past where I've needed 5 days rest afterwards, probably more marathons, I guess. But because I've, you know, developed a decent distance base, as long as I stick to lighter weights at CrossFit for the week after and easier runs, you know, not be running any sprints or anything like that, then my body is pretty happy to do that and have that recovery without me feeling like I need to take more time off. It's probably why I like the half marathon anyway, is because I don't really like long periods of recovery. So that is pretty much everything you would need to look at a pacing strategy for your race and start thinking about the kinds of things that you can do before and after to make it as enjoyable a process as possible. Though the end will probably not be, well, the end is enjoyable. The lead up to the end is, but, you know, I mean, it's painful, but it's, I think that there's also, like, I got to that last 3 kilometers and there was definite sense of pride in that I was able to handle being in that pain cave, even though I was not in a race. And there was no one else there pushing me, and it was just me, and I was able to sort of stick it out and do it. So there's always, I think even with the hard stuff, there's always got to be something that you love about it. Even with that really unpleasant last 5 kilometres of the half marathon. So if you're looking at a 5K or a 10K or something of that variety in terms of pacing, you can just look at doing something similar with breaking it down into 3 or 5 sections. It's going to make you able to mentally get through the distance a lot easier, because you're not talking about 10 kilometres, you're talking about, you know, 2 or 3 kilometres. And it's also going to make sure that you have enough in the tank at the end to feel like you're finishing strong, rather than feeling like you've burnt out in the middle. I've certainly done that before. I did an 8K race and I just went out way too fast. I thought I was going to die. And it was a miracle that I finished. And it is incredible what a big difference just having, easing your way in a bit more of a warm up, all of those things are really worth taking the time to do. I mean, I'd be the first person in the past to make fun of people who were warming up before a half marathon, because they had plenty of time to run. But Now I get it, because it does make such a huge difference and it makes the experience so much more enjoyable. And yeah, like if I was just going off to run a social half marathon, I wouldn't warm up. But if I was going for, you know, to run at pace, then I definitely would warm up, and I'd start looking at if it's not something that you've done before, you're sort of intense or quality sessions in the past, give it a go, because I think that it has made me enjoy those sessions so much more, because by the time I get to the work, my body's ready for the pace and it's not a shock to the system, and I feel a lot more in control of the pace and I feel like I'm running it rather than it's running me. So definitely give it a try, and I will be back next week with... On the podcast, we have Jo, and she is going to be talking about running 100 kilometres at Northburn in New Zealand earlier in the year, which is amazing. So I will speak to you then. Have a great week. Bye.